Hello, my name's Giles Davis and I work for Microsoft in the UK in the developer tools team. And what I want to look at today is how Visual Studio 11 supports agile development. So the agenda for this is going to be fairly straightforward. We're going to start by looking at how do we prioritize our work in agile development teams. Then we're going to look at how do we actually plan, so moving from product backlog essentially to the sprint backlog. Then we're going to look at a little bit at how can we help the execution within a sprint, and in particular, we want to take a look at the unit testing support that we've now got within Visual Studio 11. And then to finish up, we're going to take a look at how do we track back after each sprint and deal with the next planning cycle. So before we start, I want to talk about what we mean by our development environment and how we support what is essentially a team activity, and that's through Team Foundation Server. So we're going to be looking at Team Foundation Server 11 beta today. Essentially, that provides version control, so source control for source and other assets. It also provides the development process support, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. But we've also got an automated build engine, so we can support continuous integration and scheduled builds. We've got test case management, and we've got reporting that we'll cover a little bit today as well. Now, how do you access that? And we'll see a little bit of this in this session as well, is that as a .NET developer, I'll primarily be accessing Team Foundation Server from Visual Studio, and there's obviously very deep integrations there. But there are plenty of other roles that might be involved in this particular project or team. So for project managers, team leaders, product owners, Scrum Masters may well be coming in not necessarily through Visual Studio, but might prefer to use Excel or web access or some other way into that. And I'll show you some of the options there. And of course, there are testers who might use Test Manager. And we also have support for non-.NET developers. So we have an integration into Eclipse called Team Explorer Everywhere. So for example, Java developers can also access exactly the same capabilities and join in the delivery of the project. So before I start, I just want to talk a little bit about process. So this is Agile support within Visual Studio 11. There are lots of different types of Agile, and people mean different things by Agile. So I wanted to clarify how we support that. And within Team Foundation Server, there's a concept called a process template. And a process template changes the behavior and some of the capabilities within Team Foundation Server to support a specific development process. The processes that we provide out of the box are these in TFS and Visual Studio 11. So Microsoft Visual Studio Scrum 2, which is the very pure Scrum implementation of a process template, and that's what we'll be using today, so we'll show you that. We also have the MSF for Agile software development process template, and that's really a Scrum-like process template, so it has Scrum concepts. It doesn't require you to work in a pure Scrum fashion. And then there are some non-agile process templates like the MSF for CMMI. There's also very recently been brought out the practical Kanban guidance from the ALM Rangers. So although that's not agile, it's more lean, there are an increasing number of process templates in this space, as well as additional process templates from our partners. So there's a range to choose from. We're going to concentrate on Scrum for purposes of this session. So let's start by looking at prioritization and how we begin to work on our projects. So the key concept here is really that of maintaining a product backlog that's gathered perhaps by product owners, perhaps business analysts, depending on the roles and the way you actually work your processes. But there are effectively a wish list of requirements that's being built up. And the key thing is that those are kept constantly prioritized so that we always know what the next business priority is, even if we're not able to deliver that at the moment. So this is a backlog of requirements that we would like to deliver, and we keep them in the right order. So here we have a new item on the product backlog list, and as a result of discussions with the business or anybody else, we can raise or lower its relative priority in the product backlog list. So that we have the right order available at any time. And each of these product backlog items is typically going to represent something like a user story. Doesn't necessarily have to. Can be bugs and other things as well. And within each of those, there will be acceptance criteria. So not only here is a description of what I want to achieve, but here is how I know whether or not we will have successfully delivered that. So we'll see that when we have a look at this. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to drop out of the slides and we'll take a quick look at this area. So I'm going to start by showing the integration between Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server in this area. So here I'm looking at a product backlog query that has brought back all of the product backlog items in our project. Now, this can be extremely useful to work on and discover and navigate within Visual Studio. It means as a developer, I don't need to leave the Visual Studio environment and I'm just working in a single tool and accessing everything I need to. Here are the individual product backlog items. And for any one specific instance of those, then we can have a look at the details for that. So here is a product backlog item that's got a simple description and some acceptance criteria and so on. So we can work on those and we can reorder those within Visual Studio. Another option, which is not new to Visual Studio 11, but is well worth highlighting, is the integration with Excel. So this is exactly the same information, but the query has been executed and returned within Excel. This hasn't just returned it as a flat CSV file within Excel, but this is actually editable. So for those fields that I can now choose the, let's say, who I want to assign this to, relevant states, etc., etc. And when I've done that or added in additional product backlog items, I can publish these to Team Foundation Server and refresh back again. So we have a two-way editing experience between Excel and Team Foundation Server. So that's very useful if you don't have Visual Studio or don't want to be using Visual Studio. So for example, you might be a team leader and perhaps you're not using Visual Studio and you'd like to participate in these planning processes, and Excel can be very very powerful for that. It's also a good way of using Excel capabilities, so things like stack ranking, reordering, prioritizing. You can apply the numbers very easily. These are the existing sort of capabilities. What I want to show you is where we've really started to work on this in the new web access layer. So what I'm going to do is open up the new web access onto Team Foundation Server, and we can have a look at the product backlog here. So there's a few things I want to talk about here. First of all, this is the new web access front end for Team Foundation Server. It is HTML and JavaScript, so it's cross-browser. So I'm running this in IE10, actually, on Windows 8, but it will work in other browsers and other platforms. And there's been a lot of work on usability, really. So to give you a couple of examples, you know, here I've got a number of product backlog items, but I might want to do some reordering, and actually a very natural way of doing that is just dragging and dropping. And I can just move stuff around and reorder it as I wish. And you can see there's a little bit of async saving going on, and there's been a lot of work on asynchronous activities. So as I make changes, add new product backlog items, whatever it happens to be, those saves are committed asynchronously, which means I can just get on with it and the saves are done in the background. So we can move stuff around and say, well, actually now I think it should go back down here and so on. Now, what we can also do, of course, is not just reorder, but actually start to add in new product backlog items. So to give you an example, I'll say here's a new product backlog item, and we'll hit add, and I'm going to say another PBI, and we'll hit add, etc. So these get added in, they're being saved in the background, and you'll notice they're being added in where my cursor was in the product backlog list. So if I move that, I want to start to add in new product backlog items here. So if I say yet another PBI and I hit add, that's going to be added in where the cursor was in that list. So we can add these in very easily very quickly. I can choose between either bugs or product backlog items to add in the Scrum process template. So bugs being a valid work item that we can decide to work on in the next sprint, for example. You know, when are we going to fix this bug? We accept it, but when do we actually address it? I can work on these very easily. Having done this, probably the next step will be to start to assign these to a sprint. So what we'll do is let's take one of these, our another PBI. A simplest way of doing that is I can just come in, assign that to the sprint, and that's now been assigned to sprint one. So a very straightforward process. Of course, with any of these, we can go in and set more details. So I can open up the product backlog item, and I might want to actually assign it to a specific sprint this way. I might want to actually assign it to somebody, assign it to an area, put in a greater description, set acceptance criteria, and so on. But those are optional steps that I can do as and when I think it's appropriate. So hopefully you can see just the working with the product backlogs is a very natural process and very easily supported. So I'm going to switch back to the slides and let's have a look at the next step. So what I want to look at is planning. So we've had a little look at the product backlog. We can add things in very easily. We can reprioritize. So what do we do next? So from that product backlog for each sprint, what we'll be doing is deciding which of those product backlog items we can undertake in the next sprint, in the sprint we're currently entering. So you may well go through some kind of planning exercise, whatever process you take. So it might be something like planning poker. So you may get a number of people to give their estimates independently and then converge on a solution that we think is going to be this big. And having done that, that means that you may well provide different estimates for those items in the product backlog list. And that allows you to think about bringing those over into the sprint. For each of those items in the that you've brought over from the product backlog item to the sprint, we're going to break those down into a number of tasks. And those tasks will be assigned to individuals who will provide estimates. If all of those tasks are completed, that product backlog item will be delivered. So as you look at that and start to discuss it with the team and break those down, a number of tasks will arise out of that. Now, in the course of doing that, it may well be that you discover this is going to be too much to take on in this sprint, that actually there's more than you realised, or that it really adds up to too much work. So you may decide to return something effectively back to the product backlog list and choose something that's perhaps of less, a lower business priority, but perhaps something that can be fitted into that sprint. So we'll bring that over, have a look at that, and decide that we can commit to delivering this within this sprint. So what I want to do is just look at how we move in the tools, and from in the web access in particular, from the product backlog to the sprint backlog. So here we've got the product backlog list. We have moved things into the sprint, so let's go and start having a look at that sprint backlog. So what we can see here is that I've got a number of product backlog items that have been assigned to this sprint. So a few things to point out. Each of these product backlog items has been broken down into a number of tasks. So if we look at our another PBI that we created just now, there's that big plus next to it. If I click on that, then I can start to create tasks underneath that. So for example, I might have, I can have something like code something. I want to assign that to somebody, so I might assign that to me. And I might decide on an activity, so I think this is actually a development activity, and I can start to set these up. And I might say that the remaining work is 10 units, whatever those are, story points, jelly beans, hours, whatever makes sense for you. And I might give it a backlog priority, so let's give it a backlog priority of 3, and I can give it a description and some acceptance tests, etc., as I need to. So let's close that have that in here. So I'm starting to break this down. And let's just go and put in another task. So I'm going to say test something. And again, I'm going to assign this to myself. And we'll say that this is going to take 5. And I'm going to put this into testing. So I'll save and close that. So I'll keep it simple for now. So a few things to point out. So obviously we can very easily break this down into those tasks, and we could be doing that collaboratively and deciding what's in there. As I make these changes, I don't know if you notice, we'll make a change so you can see in a second. The burn down here is changing in real time as we make those changes. Now, the way this is working, if you're familiar with earlier versions of Team Foundation Server, is that this is not going to the analysis cube, but it's actually going to the operational store. In other words, it's directly getting the data. So as we make changes, this will change. So if I come in here and if I make a change to a particular task, so let's come in randomly, let's come back in here and say, in fact, let's go back to this one, let's keep it similar. Let's say it's not a 10, but actually it's 100. If I move that over, if you keep an eye on the burn down the corner, as we do that, we should see that there's a bigger spike here. Yeah. So if we go in there, we can see that because I've adjusted that from 10 to 100, a little bit silly, but actually we've got a massive spike now in our burn down. So I'll go back in and just change that back for now. And again, we'll see that the burn down chart updates very quickly. So what we're also looking at on the right-hand side here is an indication of how much work there is to be done and how much capacity there is within the team. Now, broken at the top here, this is actually broken down overall by the team. So in fact, we're over capacity. We've taken on too much work. The next area is actually breaking it down by activity. So when I was in the task, I'd broken that down and specified that this was one of these activities. And I'd say this was development, for example. So this has been added to the development activity, and I can see how much work we're doing in particular areas. And then it's also broken down by individual as well. So I can see that, that we've got two people on the team. I'm way over capacity, so I've got 35 hours of work and only 8 hours of capacity. And Richard has got 10 with 8 hours of capacity. So something I might want to look at here is actually how much work can we do within this sprint? And this is where the capacity tab can add in support here to help you work that out. So I can say that, in fact, I was working on the basis that I was only able to provide 4 hours of work a day. And perhaps I've just stopped working on another parallel project, and perhaps I could update that and say, well, in reality, it is probably more like 7 hours now. And I thought I was not going to be available on some of these days, so let's get rid of that. Drop that down. And actually, there we go, it's looking like I can now do the work that I've been assigned. So we can start playing around with the capacity, the work we're taking on, and obviously the team members, and work on those until we actually looks like we can achieve what we need to within this sprint. So that's looking at the sprint backlog itself. What I also want to look at is the new task board that we've got within Web Access. So this is another view of the same information. Obviously, this is an equivalent to a whiteboard with post-it notes on it. And there's lots of useful features on this. So I can see what's going on inside the sprint. I can see what state each of the tasks are in very easily. And I can also move those around. So for example, if we go and pick up the things we've just created, code something, let's say that I'm started to work on that coding. I've just changed the state of that from to do to in progress, and that's now in the in progress column. Now, at any point, I might want to filter this down. This is a relatively small list. You might have a large number of items within your sprint, so you might want to filter by person. So let's say I'm only interested in those things that I'm doing. Then I can see I've taken on the bulk of the work here. And just grayed out here is somebody else's work, so Richard's work in this case. So the converse, if Richard wanted to have a look at this, it's actually closing down all of those user stories that Richard is not involved in, and it's highlighting the tasks that Richard has been assigned. So it can just give you a nice simplification of what's going on inside the view. So let's set that back. Another view that's very interesting is actually to pivot this round by the team members. And I think this really supports the sort of daily stand-up type of approach. So I now know across all of my different user stories which tasks are to do, which are in progress, and which are done. So it's much easier for me to prepare for that kind of work, similarly obviously for each team member. Now something else I just want to point out, because I think it's quite a nice feature actually, is that let's say I've continued to work on my code something and I decide that it's done. So I've moved it into done. Now, if you notice, there was a number, it was 10, which was the amount of work, the remaining work we thought there was for that code something. And of course, because we're saying it's done, that has automatically set the remaining work to zero. So if we have a look at it, we can see that it's done. We don't need to add that in. Now, if I was to actually reopen that and say, you know what, it's not actually done, it's in progress, it's telling me there's an error there. And if I go into that, the reason for that is that if it's now in progress, there must be more than no remaining work. So I've got to put something back in. And in fact, I think there's an hour's worth of work left to do. So it's just a nice little helper, really, to make sure that, yes, I've moved it back into in progress. There must be something that you need to do. So let's just record that and put it in there. So last couple of things I want to show you around this area is just general work items view. So you can still navigate to any of the work items within the project inside the web access. You can run queries. We provide a whole series of queries, and you can create your own. And within each of these, of course, you can dive into the individual work items. So all of that capability is there, and you can edit the queries that are there or create your own. So let's go back to our slides. And take a look at the next steps, which is around how can we support the execution of the sprint. So what we want to do, obviously, is track our work across the product backlog into the sprints and then within the sprint. And one of the key things that I really want to look at for this is around unit testing and how we support test-driven development and a pattern known as red-green sort of refactor. So the approach here is let's start by writing a unit test. That fails because we don't have any code. So we write some code, repeat the test, and it now turns green. It passes. So we repeat that. So we write some more tests. We write some code. We rerun the tests. They are green. We repeat. We write a test, some more code, that turns green. Once we've done this enough, we'll then look at refactoring the code typically and say, well, actually, we probably want to reorganize this and move this around. However, the test should continue to work, and that obviously is part of what the unit tests will help you understand and give you confidence in, is whether or not this is working. So we continue, write some more tests, write some more code. And the way we support this within Visual Studio has changed now in Visual Studio 11. So if we look back at 2010 and earlier, we have the Microsoft Unit Test Framework that allows you to create unit tests and to run unit tests against your code. With 2010, we introduced Test-Driven Development, TDD, which allowed you to write your unit tests first. And then to write the code afterwards. That's a tricky thing to do just because it's code calling code. So what the test-driven development support gives you is the ability to create the tests first and then generate the stubs for the code that's going to be called. Microsoft Research also has a tool called PEX, which really it's very clever. It will actually analyze your code and suggest unit tests that need to be written, looking at boundary conditions and so on. And that continues to be available and something that can help you determine what unit tests to write. But new for Visual Studio 11 is the introduction of support for other unit test frameworks. So for example, NUnit, XUnit and others. And the way this is being delivered is with the Visual Studio Meta Runner around the unit testing framework. And this really means there's a framework layer that allows a number of, or any number of, unit test frameworks to be plugged into Visual Studio. So at the moment, there's support for NUnit, XUnit, and QUnit, but more should be available over time. So what I'd like to do this step is let's go back to Visual Studio and just have a quick look at the unit testing support inside Visual Studio. So we're back in Visual Studio 11. Let's close down the product backlog for now. I'm not bothered about changes, that's fine. So let's have a look at the unit test explorer, and let's just pin this here for a moment. And I'm going to rerun these so you can see that in this particular solution I have a number of unit tests that exist within the overall solution. And we can run those whenever we want to. There's a new Unit Test Explorer hub that consolidates a lot of this information much more succinctly. And I can see that I've got a range of unit tests that are here. I can choose between the not run tests, those tests that have failed, in this case there aren't any that were skipped, and the pass test, which is the default view. And I can see here these are all the tests that we run. Now if I open up some of these, we can see that this is actually a Microsoft unit test, so using the Microsoft unit test framework. If I go and open up some of the others, let's have a look at this one. This is actually, just scroll up so we can see it, this is an NUnit unit test. So we've got test fixtures and the tests, and those are being run within that. And if I open up one of these, Just go up to the top, we can see that this is an X-unit unit test. So we've actually got running within a single solution a variety of unit tests from unit test framework. So we've got the Microsoft unit test framework, NUnit and XUnit all running together in parallel. I think that's really useful if you either have skills in or already have a legacy of unit tests in a particular framework, then that means you don't have to think necessarily about migrating them, or you can continue to develop unit tests in the most appropriate unit test framework for your needs. And it doesn't have to be a choice that in this solution we will use this framework. You can use those as you need them. So good support there. The other thing I'll just quickly point out is, let's say I make a change, so let's change one of these, let's just break the test. If I save that, if I just come and click build, or if I was to hit F6 or build, what you'll notice is that the unit tests get rerun automatically, and that's something you can turn on so that every time you do a build, your unit tests are rerun, so you're getting very early feedback on how this is working. If I go back to the home screen for this, we can see that obviously I've now got a failed test. I am getting timing information as well, but if I was to correct this, so let's come in here, make that change, and go back and just do another build. What we should see there is that the failed tests get run first, so that the priority is on running those tests that failed last time, so that we can find out if we fix those quickly. And that's really what we're looking at here. So very powerful, new, flexible framework approach to unit testing. So I'm going to go back to the slides. And let's take a look at the last area, which is how do we sort of track how this is working across sprints and so on. So we know that within this sprint, we've delivered a number of the user stories and their corresponding tasks. And we also build up a history of how much work we've achieved in each sprint, so the velocity of the team, so that we know that typically we'll achieve X amount of work per sprint. And that therefore gives you a really good handle on planning, because you can say if we typically achieve 10 units of work per sprint, then it's reasonable to assume that we should deliver 10 in the next sprint, unless something has changed. We've got extra people, less people, different type of work. But it gives you a really good ballpark to understand how much we should take on. So actually, if we take this example, going from sprint 3 of 12 to sprint 4 of 18, you might question whether, is that going to be too much? Is that a stretch target? Or would you have a reason to believe that if you delivered 12 last time, 18 is achievable in the next sprint? So let's just go back and have a little look at some of the capabilities that can help with that. So I'm going to go back to the web access. I'm going to start by going back to the home page. There's a couple of things here that can be quite useful to see. There's these tiles give you an indication of work that's outstanding, and you actually can create these yourself. Just add a query to the team favourites and it becomes a tile on the front page. We can see how we're doing on the sprint, on the burn downs and so on. But what I want to do, let's go back to the sprint, and in fact to the product backlog. Now, because this is a new project and we're in sprint one, we don't have existing sprint information. If I did, then this is where the velocity would be shown up. So we'd see what our velocity is to date, and I'll show you a screenshot of that with data in a minute. But what I think is very powerful is the ability to forecast your product backlog based on velocity. So if I turn the forecast on, what this has done is said, well, based on a velocity, in this case of 10, then I think we'd get all of this work off the product backlog done in sprint 1, and all of this would be achieved within sprint 2, etc. Now, because we're in our first sprint, that's a default velocity, but once we move out into having historical data, that will be the real the data that will be picked up from the sprints. And so, for example, if I said we could do 15 units per sprint and add that in, that's actually telling me we could do everything in the product backlog within the sprint, so there'll be enough capability to do that. So you can play around with that and work on that. So I'm going to move back to the slides. And here is on a project with historical data, the same velocity chart, but showing we'd actually be able to track that across sprints, and therefore that would be used within the forecasting capability. It's also probably a good point to talk about other reporting as well. So Team Foundation Server includes a reporting engine. This is an example of a report that's tracking user stories against test cases. So we can see how well are we doing on user stories themselves, so how much work is remaining, how complete are they. And we can also see, do they have associated test cases? And if so, have tests been run? And if tests have been run, do we have any bugs? And if we have any bugs, what state are they in? So a very powerful report that brings a lot of information back together very succinctly. And we also provide dashboards. So these are SharePoint-based dashboards that collate a lot of trend data into an easily accessible form. So they're really the landing page for the project. And the idea would be the extended team can see the status of the project. It's all configurable. You can create your own dashboards. You can decide which reports are used within the web parts inside SharePoint as well. Now, one thing I'll point out is that for this session, I've been using Team Foundation Server Service Preview, which is Team Foundation Server in the cloud. So all of this has been just over the internet to Team Foundation Server hosted in Windows Azure in the cloud. So just to point out what that gives you, everything I've shown you in the demos, you have. So that includes integration from Visual Studio, from Excel, from Project, from Eclipse, on your desktop up into the cloud. You get all of the work item capabilities, so that's the product planning, sprint planning that I've shown you, task boards, all of that is included. Access to the source control, the version control capabilities of Team Foundation Server, and also automated builds and build logs. All of that is supported in Team Foundation Service Preview. What you don't get is the reporting. So you do get the burn down and velocity, but you don't get the actual reports and dashboards that I talked about. That's not available yet in the cloud version. So I hope that's been useful. Where I want to finish with is just talk about a couple of resources. So you can download Visual Studio 11 now, the beta. That's available for download through MSDN or public. I've put in the link there, but it's basically Microsoft.com/Visual Studio/11. You can also sign up for the Team Foundation Service Preview, and that will give you an account. It's currently in preview stage. It's free, and you can use that and try it out. There is a complete Visual Studio 11 virtual machine that includes a ready installed Team Foundation Server 11 and Visual Studio 11, and that means you can work through a series of labs that are provided. So if this looks interesting, you'd like to step through it and try a hands-on approach, then that might well be an easy way to get up and running as well. And if there's any other questions that I can help with, then either email me, it's giles.davis@microsoft.com. You can follow us on Twitter, that's at Visual Studio UK, or we have a blog which is on the MSDN pages, Visual Studio UK, which we try and put interesting stuff up from time to time. So in summary, I think the new Visual Studio 11 and Team Foundation Server 11 provide some really strong agile planning and development support capabilities. And if that looks interesting, then all of this is available for you to have a look at. So please have a look, have a play, and enjoy. Thank you very much.